Good evening. James McCanny here with My Science Hour, February 17th. A lot of topics to cover this week. Last night I was a guest, second hour, the main guest on the Coast to Coast AM radio show out of Los Angeles with host George Norrie. And at any rate, make sure you check up that archive if you missed the show live. Tonight's show, I'll be talking a little bit about lifestyle, but the main science topic I'll be dealing with kind of an update on the Planet X issue. Turns out there's a lot of misinformation floating around out there, and it's always a favorite topic with many people because it's just something that's on people's minds. The issue of Planet X has received a lot of attention lately, and a lot of misinformation coming out. More and more, there's just some people, some Johnny come latelys, that think they know something, that have captured small audiences. But the point is that these people have really no information. They're just trying to sensationalize to bring information, to try and bring information to the public, but they really don't have anything to say. Luckily, enough people listen to this show that I think people are catching on how to read the misinformation. So a little bit of a Planet X update, and partly also this is spurred by the announcement this past week that some scientists in the U.S. Now, it's always interesting. I see this all the time, when especially for misinformation articles. The so-called science and scientists, the science and scientists are in the United States, but the announcements come out of England. And, you know, it's just very strange because the U.S. press doesn't announce it. And then the U.S. press picks it up and says, oh, England is saying this. And so it's a very subtle way of shifting blame, let's put it that way. So at any rate, I'll be talking more about that later in the show. But at any rate, this latest study supposedly claims that there is a extra planet out there, another planet, a 10th planet, or in this case they're calling it the 9th, because Pluto has been reduced to the status of a Kuiper Belt object. I've talked about that before. The reason for that little game, reducing the status of Pluto from a planet, is because they had two choices. They've discovered dozens and dozens of new planets the size of Pluto. So they had two options. They could either say there are dozens and dozens of new planets that we've just discovered, or they could say Pluto no longer qualifies as a planet, and so none of these other ones do either. And so therefore there are now 8 planets instead of 9, and it would stifle the question, well, where are all these new planets coming from? And if there are all these new planets, couldn't there be a big one out there? And if there's a big one, couldn't it come into the solar system? Well, you get the trend, the logic that the average person would certainly go through. So to avoid that, they have basically stated that Pluto isn't a planet. But at any rate, now they're claiming that there's a 9th planet, but way out there. It won't be discovered for another couple of years, but it's being theorized. And a couple scientists from Louisiana have stated that their data, and now, by the way, this data comes around every now and then, too, so this is not a new discovery. But their data suggests that there is an unusual number of comets coming from a certain direction in the solar system. Well, gee, who's been talking about that for many years? You know, that's just a topic that I've been talking about for a very long time. That there is an inordinate number of comets coming from the south. And it's in an area, by the way, that we will not be able to see again until June of this year. It's an area in the southern sky out of which came Hale-Bopp. And there are indications that a planet once called Nibiru or Wormwood came from that same area. But and the reason there are indications is because that's where a guy named Harrington, who worked for the Naval Observatory, had made observations, observations contracted by NASA, as he was the head of the Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C. These observations were made from New Zealand in the throughout the 1980s and into about 1981, and then all of a sudden the program stopped. But his conclusions were that, yes, there is a major solar system object down there, and he claimed to have photographed it, but then, well, that's a long story. But the point is that now astronomers are making a claim that there is a disordinate number of comets coming into the solar system from a certain direction, and it's because this Nibiru-type planet is out at the Oort cloud, this imaginary cloud of ice ball comets that exists so far away that nobody can detect it, but standard science still rests their laurels on this as the home and source of the dirty snowballs that occasionally come into the solar system. This concept was started by a scientist named Oort, O-O-R-T. Not a character from the Tolkien novels, but a that was the scientist's name, and he projected that there was a cloud of ice balls far, far away from the solar system, and that occasionally large planets came through the solar system and or near the solar system and kicked some of these comets out, and that caused them to come into the solar system. So the concept that this might happen is not new. And I always love how they call this a radical new discovery. It's really not. It's very, very old laundry being hung out to dry again. But at any rate, I'll talk some more about that. Let me just make a few quick comments here. This past week, the Doomsday Vault came up in the news. And it's a vault that's up in, I think it's up in Scandinavia, up in the northern Arctic Circle area. And it's a place that has been designed to save seeds of the world. And so people or organizations supposedly are cataloging and bringing seeds there to store. So if the world ever is destroyed or if man ever has a nuclear holocaust, then the seed population of the world could be restored. This is a myth, that somehow this is, if this is the saving grace of the planet, then we're in big trouble. And here's the problem. If you go to any woods, any field, any forest, if you go any place where there's plant life, and look at it, this is a thriving ecosystem. The plants that grow next to each other are there in harmony. And, of course, competing for space. But they are constantly adapting to the conditions. These developed in these same areas under climate, under all kinds of conditions, rainfall, and they're very specific to certain areas. A lot of plants grow in a very specific area of the world. So to do this right, you would have to take the seeds from all over the world, of all the grasses, all of the grains, all of the weeds, the fungus. You'd have to take the spores of fungus, which are very important in the life cycle of plants because they break down the plant so that plant matter can be used again. So the entire cycle with bugs and insects all would have to be stored someplace in kind of this magic jar and all of a sudden come back out. To believe that you can take the seeds of certain plants, mainly commercial plants, put them in a vault, and that's somehow going to regenerate the earth is ridiculous. It's absolutely, absolutely ridiculous. Where are the bees going to come from that pollinate the plants? Where are the insects going to come from, which are an essential part, which probably eat some of the plants? Then where are the birds that eat the insects and cause the cycle, this entire cycle of an ecosystem, how can scientists be so radically stupid as to think that this seed vault will somehow regenerate the earth in its plant systems? It's absolutely absurd, because you'd have to regenerate the entire ecosystem, have the same salt, the same dirt composition, the same waterfall, the same atmosphere, the same weather climate cycles, annual, with summer, winter, depending on whether you're in a temperate or a very cold climate. Or, and then how are you going to take all these seeds and distribute them back to the area where they grew properly if the end of the world came? How are you going to get these seeds back to an area where they originally grew? The whole concept of the seed vault is ridiculous. And it's good that people are saving seeds. I think that's good. I very much agree with the people who are saving heirloom seeds. I very much support those people. But the idea that you can somehow save certain commercial seeds of the world and make that, and somehow imagine that's going to resupply the earth with plant life, it's just absolutely, absolutely absurd. So at any rate, just a quick comment on that. And it's a token effort, let's put it that way. It's a nice token effort. Recently I've been talking about, last week's show, I talked about the myth of alternative energy. And it's a topic which I've been talking about on other radio shows, and it's a topic I will continue to talk about and try and make more public in the future. Because the reality is that there's another major myth that somehow windmills and solar power are going to provide us with the energy that we're currently using. Well, I made a calculation once, in a series of calculations, to cover the world's energy needs, if you took a snapshot about a year ago, and of course the energy needs of the world are ever increasing as China and other countries are coming online with tremendous energy needs, you would have to install around the world around 700 million wind generator towers of the type that are going in right now, the 2 megawatt variety. These would have to go in, 700 million of them around the world. Well, it's absolutely absurd to imagine that industry, when we see the wind towers going in, you see 10 or 20 going in at a time. So it's absolutely absurd to imagine that this somehow is going to cure or even put a dent in curing our energy problem. Look at this winter, the energy usage in the northern climates of the world, all around Europe, Russia, United States, Canada. The incredible amount of energy that is used simply to heat your house in these areas. And the world energy supplies are, it's just absolutely absurd to be using this energy for that purpose. The houses are not designed for that area. There are some people who have built energy efficient houses in those areas that you could heat with a light bulb. That's an energy efficient house, not the big houses that we see in the northern climates. They were built in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and then those types of designs continued because that was the way to build a house. That was just the way to do it. And nobody ever thought. Some people were ingenious enough to build an energy efficient house, but the problem is, how many of those are in existence? Very few. So at any rate, the real issue with energy is that simply we use too much energy. We're addicted to energy, and a big part of that energy addiction is that the people in charge, the bankers and the people who want to make you think that the way we live is okay, the problem is that they can use the evening news and the newspaper to talk about the stock market and all of these issues, that really have nothing to do with anything, but they want to give this image that that's what's really important. And we all have to keep working so that the stock market is up there, and it's all phony. It's a phony lifestyle. So the real problem is that simply lifestyle. The world cannot continue to support the lifestyle, and it's not going to change. What I'm saying here is not going to change anything. The only thing people can do is just get out on your own, get away, live in an area where a lifestyle is zero energy usage, and we all take energy. But the idea is that you would be using energy that's available within a 1 mile radius of where you live. So your energy usage is very minimal. So it just comes down to lifestyle, and the world isn't going to change. So this is going to continue until the world literally destroys itself, is impacted by the virus, which we call the human race. At any rate, the only thing that people can do is simply get away. And remember that is not allowed. I talk about that in the Diamond Principle, my new book, that when people try and get away and are successful, just imagine if group after group after group were successful in getting away from society and growing their own food and living in harmony, and having their kids and educating their kids the way they want without the government-sponsored school system. Those groups are not seen in a very positive light from the controllers, because if they succeed, they have to be isolated and called cults, and they use all kinds of other names to isolate the groups that are successful, that have, and usually those groups have to have a fairly stringent lifestyle, not too extravagant. They're not getting their supplies from Walmart or Kmart or Target or Sam's Club or wherever. Those people have to depend on their own ability to just about make everything that they have. So, and that's living within their means. Living a lifestyle that is supportable and sustainable. So, but those groups are not highly viewed by the people in control, because if they're successful and happy, that doesn't bode well for the people in charge, because the system they're trying to pawn off as real, as normal, is not working. Look at the unhappiness in the world. Look at the distraught, the starvation. You know, the kids going to bed hungry at night in the United States and all over the world, starvation, third world countries where the very few people reign and rule everything and are very rich, and the rest of the people are dirt poor and can't and are expected to work for just, you know, $10 a month and exist, and all the other social problems that go with that economic system that's been forced onto these people. So, but if groups broke away, let's take an imaginary Latin American country that has good land resources, could grow a lot of food, and let's say that a good portion of it is taken over by a company like Dole, or that grows bananas and pineapples, let's say, for example, your typical banana republic. The food, all of that goes away. That's shipped out with the labor, cost-effective labor of those areas, and all those products are shipped away. It doesn't provide food for the country. Whereas all of that land could be used to raise food for the people of the country. So they would have a decent living situation. They would have sufficient food. The kids would not go to bed hungry, and they would be able to maintain a lifestyle. So the point is that the lifestyle is just not is just not available because the way the banking industry combines with governments to force people into a lifestyle that is simply not good for anybody. It's only good for the very wealthy people. So at any rate, I started talking about this because of the Doomsday Vault and also because of energy usage, the amount of energy being used by the populations. So, a very simple solution, find your own path, because at this point, we're not going to save the world, and the world is not going to let you save it. The people in charge are not going to let you save the world. The only thing you can do is somewhat keep under the radar and take care of yourselves. That's what I promote. And people that want to do that, and some people say, well, you know, I'm going to do that as soon as I make a certain amount of money, or as soon as such and such happens, or as soon as I retire, or as soon as, you know, and the situation is that most of those people will never do anything. They will never get away. They will be bound up within the lifestyle that has been given to them. It's very difficult to leave, and so the best thing to do, and what some people do, is they just one day decide, I'm not going to do this anymore, and they get up, and they pack their bags with a little bit of stuff, and they leave. And they might take some money with it. I have known people who packed up and left with literally no money and started another life, went to some place, and decided they wanted to live a life that was economically viable and that supported their philosophy. And it was rugged for a while. They had to sleep in a car until they could get enough money to rent a place or find another living accommodations, some with kids. So a lot of these people have done things that are just really not very easy to do. But they finally left, they made the break, they got away, and started a different lifestyle. And those people become very... I'm not sure what the word would be. Very self-sustaining people. They're people who earned what they have. They've worked hard for what they have. And they also realize values. They move because of values. Values in their life, values for their kids. Something that, something I made a comment last week. I just repeated something I'd said on earlier shows. That some people... You hear this often, you know, I've done everything right, I paid all my bills, I sent the kids to college, the daughters are married off, I paid my taxes, I supported my government, I was in the a war, and my kids are going to be in the military, and they say all of these things. I went to church every Sunday. I paid my tithing to the church, and I did everything right. And what I say to these people is, no, you did everything wrong. You lived a lifestyle that caused tremendous hardship and suffering around the world, and you're too stupid to know it, to recognize it. It's really, really amazing to see people who have no clue of what's going on in the world. This is why the term comes the ugly American. I've traveled pretty much all over the world, and I consistently see this. People that would openly make fun of the money in another country and say, oh, that's, I wish they would use American dollars here. It would make it so much easier. And what a small perspective, let's put it that way. When I hear people say that, or belittling hand labor or the way people live in other countries, it's not because that's the way they want to live. That's the lifestyle that has been forced on them. But at any rate, okay, well, enough of that topic, but I'd like to revisit those topics because they all go together. What does that have to do with science? Well, it has a lot to do with science because science is the backbone. It is essential for the bankers, the controllers, that have run what I call the medieval European banking system that run the United States and other countries with those systems. And it's very essential for those groups to promote bad science. It's part of the equation and is very necessary because real science would set the people free. So you have to have bad science, substitute science, bogus science, and you have to have scientists who run the bogus science operations. The scientists who, what I call the tier two scientists, the scientists who are owned, receive a paycheck, and have not had an original thought in 30 years. And as long as they keep repeating over and over again that comets are dirty snowballs or whatever they're saying, that continental drift explains the way we see the world today. As long as they keep saying that, they keep getting a paycheck. And so that's the system of science we have. I made a statement a number of weeks ago that about 95% of what you hear in colleges is incorrect. And it's something you have to, it's like commercials. You have to hear them repeatedly, and the second or the third time, maybe it's going to start to stick and you'll remember it. But anyway, I said that about 95% of what you're taught in a modern college or university is simply incorrect. And you might think, well, how could 95% of it be wrong? There's no way. What's the other 5% that's correct? Well, the 5% that's correct, you probably learn in your freshman year. And it all seems well and good, and it's all you can see, like physics experiments, cars rolling down a ramp, and you can measure the gravity and the acceleration and the velocity increase, and it matches the equations, and it gives you the perspective that everything in physics is correct. And of course, physics advances, and there's a tremendous amount, say, just in the field of physics or chemistry or biology or geology, there's a tremendous amount that is known, and it's very solid. But then all of a sudden, there's a subtle movement into other arenas where the information is not solid. It's not consistent with what's going on in the world. And that's where the other 95% of information takes off. So as you progress through your studies and try and learn about the world, the history of the world, the history of man, etc., about 95% of what they're teaching is purely wrong. It's just wrong, because very simply put, how can the vision of the world be even close to correct when the most important major event that ever happened in recent history, the major disruption of this planet and the solar system by a celestial object coming nearby, which in the case of Earth, the most recent one was the planet Venus coming through as a large comet. So just remember that, planet, comet, what's the real relationship? In my book, Planet X, Comets, and Earth Changes, I make that distinction that planets come from comets. Jupiter was the exception. It was a twin star of the Sun back in the original early days of the Sun, but pretty much everything else has been captured at a later date. So what's the difference between planets and comets? Well, they're different phases of evolution of planetary objects. The comet comes first, it's captured, the tail material is brought into the comet nucleus by powerful electrical forces, and then eventually that object nestles into a circular orbit and becomes a planet. So what's the difference? Well, part of it is the comet and formative stages, and then eventually it becomes a planet, so or moon of the solar system. At any rate, that also ties in with this announcement, which is total misinformation. So let me just start by a little bit of a Planet X update before I go into the main science topic. As of right now, first of all, there's a lot of misinformation, a lot of people making claims. There's some people saying, oh, Planet X has been in the solar system, it's heading by, and they give you a different scenario every week. And if it were there, something that big, you would see it as a large comet. And there really aren't objects like that raging through the solar system at this time. But the second point is, what is the reality? And the reality is that I think NASA, with this announcement they've just made, is looking at a major cover-up. Because people don't just simply make announcements by themselves. Scientists don't make announcements by themselves. They have to have permission, so to speak. So the point is that these scientists in Louisiana didn't simply make this announcement and get national news coverage all by themselves. They had a little help from the people above, the people that want misinformation out. And so, by the way, June is coming up. June is the month in which we can see the lower end of the solar system. The part where Harrington said Planet X is coming from. Remember also that there are many Planet X's out there. There are many Planet X's in the solar system, and we don't have information. Probably NASA has discovered many of them, but of course it's not saying anything. So as far as the common man or ability to actually give information about a Planet X object, there is no concrete Planet X object or information, objective information at this time. And if I get a hold of any information, I will give you my interpretation of it and let people know right away. So it seems that with this announcement that just came out, which I'll be talking about, it seems that NASA is getting ready for a major misinformation campaign. Let's talk about reality. What would happen if a real Planet X object came into the solar system? Well, first of all, it would be very difficult to detect until it became a large comet somewhere in the solar system, probably the very outer part of the solar system. Accompanying this and preceding it would be a large number of small comets. Of material. Now imagine that this object must have a large entourage of objects surrounding it. So as it moves into the solar system, all of these objects would become comets and show cometary characteristics, a tail, etc. As this major object would move into the solar system, and once again I'm just stressing this is hypothetical, and not related to any real objects today, but what would you see? You would see a lot of comets. So NASA, if they're going to try and provide a story, a cover story, NASA has to provide a story which explains why you're going to see a lot of comets. Secondly, their Planet X, or that they want to discover, or think that they're going to discover with this announcement, which really isn't NASA, by the way. It comes from a pair of scientists who can be singled out and discredited if necessary. But it comes from a pair of scientists who are independent of the NASA. They belong to a university down in Louisiana. So if necessary, they could be discredited. It puts NASA at an arm's length, if you understand what I'm talking about. And so what they've announced, that there's potential to find this large object near the far distant Oort cloud that's literally thousands of times farther than the orbit of Pluto. So these are way out there. And so what they're saying is that this planet could be discovered, but as it moves through the Oort cloud, it's going to disrupt comets, which then will be flung into the solar system, and these are just little dirty snowballs which are sitting out there. So you see what they're doing by this announcement is they're trying to cover some bases. first of all, they're separating NASA from this announcement. And they're hoping that maybe NASA will lend some hands at discovering it someday, or some equipment, let's put it that way. But the point is that the planet is way out there, and it doesn't affect Earth. It's just, it's not going to come here. It's going to send a bunch of comets towards Earth in the solar system, not necessarily directly at Earth, but it's going to fill the solar system with comets. So isn't that a strange announcement? They're going to put a cover story up announcing a 10th planet, or a 9th planet in this case, because Pluto is no longer considered a planet, as I talked about already. But they're going to say that there's a planet out there, sure, but it's far away, and that's not going to bother us. But it's all these other comets that are going to come in that then can be explained. You see what I mean? They have a cover story for a lot of comets coming into the solar system from a certain area. This looks to me, and this is a pre-announcement, by the way. Mind you, they have not discovered this planet as of yet. They say it's going to be discovered in the next couple years. So that's very interesting. So they're pre-announcing, they're prepping the public, and this was, by the way, when I was searching for this article, people were sending me references. The two main references came out of England. And so that's very strange, and that has misinformation smeared all over it as far as I'm concerned. That announcement about American scientists projecting a concept about a Planet X object being announced in England has the smack of disinformation written all over it. But then pages like CNN pick it up and make an announcement where it's one of the front page clickable items for a number of days on CNN, what I call the candy nugget news. You know when you see things being announced on CNN that there's a disinformation campaign involved. CNN is, like I say, the candy nugget news. They're the news source for the twist that goes into it. Now, they simply refer to the English article and see how that puts the U.S. and everybody here at arm's length. But they talk, and the front page catch article is Mystery of the Solar System. Mystery of the Solar System. And then they show planets, showing Jupiter and a brown dwarf and a small star, showing that the brown dwarf is much bigger than Jupiter. So that what they're doing is they're intercepting anybody credible that would talk about a Planet X type object. And they can let all of the misinformation people about Planet X and all of the wannabes and the Johnny Come Latelys talk all they want, because that's great. That provides flack for diversion. So the people out here will be simply flooded from the popular side of the coin, so to speak, and then the government has its cover story all set up that this Planet X object, but which is way out there, which won't bother us at all, is kicking all these comets into the solar system. So you can see how they're setting up the public for an announcement regarding this topic, regarding Planet X and this future barrage of comets that you would see. But the real barrage of comets is due to a real Planet X that's coming in and is one of the comets itself. And so that would be kind of lost in this mix and barrage of comets. And they could just point up and the people would say, well, you know, there's a lot of comets, but this one is really big and it's really raging, and it just doesn't look like some little snowball thing to me. And then NASA could say, well, yeah, that's just a little bit bigger than average snowball. That's 10 miles across, not just 7 miles across. But don't worry about it, because it's just a snowball. Now, interestingly enough, NASA also had a big splash on Valentine's Day this past Monday, where the Stardust spacecraft, which visited Comet Vild in it was 1999, I believe, when that comet encounter occurred, that it visited the tail of a comet, swept through, and picked up tail material. Well, Comet Temple 1 in 2005, and by the way, I was on the Coast to Coast show with George Norrie that night, July 4th, 2005, when the Deep Impact spacecraft crashed into Comet Temple 1 nucleus. Well, now there's kind of a different combination. The nucleus of Comet Temple 1 is being visited by the Stardust spacecraft, if that makes any sense. But anyway, that's the second visit by the spacecraft of a comet, and the comet nucleus was visited before by a different spacecraft. But anyway, to summarize, the Stardust spacecraft passed by on Valentine's Day. So all of this information about comets is in the news lately. So it seems like the public is somewhat being primed, and of course they keep repeating that comets are dirty snowballs, and you know, they wanderers from the original formation of the solar system, which NASA claims was 4.5 billion years ago. All of the standard misinformation stories are there. So at any rate, but I got a kick out of this. Let me see if I can find this. I actually circled it. There's now a guy named Joe Vavirka is in the news big time, and he's from Cornell. He was there when I was there in 1979 to 81. He was a boisterous, young, strapping NASA scientist with an ego bigger than all of NASA. But the point is that after all of these years, I got a kick out of this comment that he makes in one of these articles. This was an AOLnews.com article, which apparently came from another source. But anyway, it says, It's known that some areas of a comet are ancient. Comets formed 4.6 billion years ago at the dawn of the solar system, while other areas are relatively new. But we can't tell which is which. Stardust chief scientist Joe Vavirka of Cornell University told AOL News. This is a way of telling which is which. And so anyway, he's talking about the visit of the comet. And so at any rate, the point is that these are old hack tier 2 scientists, and I never really understood this when I was at Cornell. I thought these were the top scientists in the world, the very best, the best of the best, etc. What I later found out was these are the tier 2 scientists. These are the ones that can maintain. That was in 1979. So we have 89, 99, there was 31, 32 years ago. And they're still saying the same thing. Okay, now, just to review, the pictures they took with the Stardust spacecraft of Comet Temple 1, and this is just a couple of days ago, shows a hot, dry rock. How can you be a comet scientist claiming that comets are dirty snowballs? And this is where the water tail comes from a comet, and you get up right next to that comet nucleus, and there's nothing coming off the nucleus. Nothing. And you look at the nucleus, and it's a hot, dry rock, and there's no water vapor on the nucleus. There's no water vapor at all, except an extremely, extremely small amount, and that's just sitting there. And if there were a small amount, and it was supposedly coming off to make it a water tail, it would have been gone long ago. So, this dirty snowball comet, how can you look at a picture? It'd be like taking a picture of an elephant and walking up to the elephant and saying, well, this isn't an elephant. This is an orangutan. That's the equivalent. It's so absolutely absurd, but these scientists can do this. 32 years later, still calling this a dirty snowball. And in 1979, of course, they had no pictures of dirty snowballs. I remember being at an American Geophysical Union meeting, and the same people, after seeing the first pictures of a comet, after the visit of first Jacobini-Zinner, which there were no pictures, but then Comet Halley, and all of the data suggested that these could not possibly be dirty snowballs. But there again, you have the same group of people, the same group that's sitting there right now, the same people in charge, and of this spacecraft saying that these are dirty snowballs and they're going to study these pictures. Well, I saw the pictures. They look more or less like smudges in the middle of a page. Nothing to write home about. But at any rate, the point is that all of the pictures show just a simple, hot, dry rock. There's no nucleus covered with ice or snow or water in any form. But the most interesting point is all of the coverage this is getting. At the same time, they're talking about this so-called Planet X discovery. And by the way, I thought it was interesting, one of the articles that talked about this new Planet X discovery out by the Oort cloud, you see how they have to mix it in with all of the standard theories, that it's way out there, it's a brown dwarf, it's by the Oort cloud, it causes comets, which are dirty snowballs. All of the standard theories, old hack, outdated theories, are mixed into this article. Trying to thoroughly ingrain in the public's mind the idea that this is how the solar system works, this is somehow well understood, you have the best scientists talking about this, etc., etc. But the new planet they're calling Tyche, which is an old goddess name from Greek mythology, but notice that they didn't call it Nibiru. Like I said before, the topic of this 10th planet has come up before many times, hundreds of times, in standard science and outside of standard science. And so Nibiru has kind of been the catch-all term that has been used. Well, these scientists didn't want to use Nibiru because of the negative connotations and the fact that, a couple years ago, there were some major articles that came out saying that this object could not possibly exist. So, at any rate, so they called it Tyche, T-Y-C-H-E, or Tyche. And so the implication is that they're trying to use a different name, pretend that this is a great new discovery, and that NASA will certainly find this object within the next couple years. And, of course, the implication is NASA will discover this at about the same time when all these comets are coming in, and see, their pre-designated theory is already on the table. They can say, this was predicted by these scientists. Aren't they great scientists? And now we're seeing all the comets that resulted from their theory, and that confirms their theory. You see how science works? I wouldn't call it science. I call it fairy tale science, the Mother Goose nursery rhyme science. And to do this, as I said, you need a lot of Tier 2 scientists who will live by this reckoning, by this direction that's given to them. And so these scientists are all excited that their discovery might, in fact, come to fruition. But at any rate, that's more or less my Planet X update for the week. And so I would say be ready to see this coming down the line very soon. Or one day you will see in the newspaper when a lot of comets start coming into the solar system that all of a sudden, and I'm not predicting that a lot of comets are going to come into the solar system. I'm not predicting that. I'm just saying that from the indications here, that's going to happen because the standard scientific community that is controlled by the world bankers already has its cover story set up. So, at any rate, you can already smell the rotten fish around this one. And as I said, the biggest thing is they use Tier 2 scientists to make these announcements. That keeps NASA at a distance, that keeps the government, that keeps the bankers at a distance, and these people are very usable. This is, would be a major discovery of their lifetime that if confirmed, and they would all be happy, but of course not even imagining that they're being used, that they're being their ignorance is being used to promote control of the world population. It's a very strange situation, but that's the way it is. I've got about 10 minutes left in the show tonight, or about 8 minutes, I believe. I have not talked about the items, the food, the freeze-dried food, or the water filters. I've purposefully not talked much about those in past radio shows. But there are many new people, and also for people who have been out there, I just want to talk about some a little bit of ordering patterns and what other people have been doing. With the freeze-dried food, it's very easy to calculate based on the information on the webpage how much freeze-dried food would you want. The biggest thing with understanding freeze-dried food is that it's relatively inexpensive food, and it's very good food. Very simple fact, you cannot freeze-dry fat or gristle or other kinds of fiber in meat. You can only freeze-dry the pure meat. So what you're buying is pure meat. It's not skin, it's not bones, it's not anything else ground up. It's simply pure meat, and it's freeze-dried. Not dehydrated, it's freeze-dried, which gives you a very low, about 1% water content, so it's very lightweight. But when you rehydrate it, after you rehydrate it and compare pound for pound for what you buy in the grocery store, which does have fat and bone and everything else in its skin, it is comparable in price. The food quality of freeze-dried food is about 90% of fresh meat. And the reason I'm talking about meat is there are vegetables and there are fruits that are freeze-dried, etc. The reason I'm talking about meat is because in dehydrated foods, you don't get meat. There's too high a water content in dehydrated food, so I just want to make that clarification. I do not sell dehydrated food, only the freeze-dried, because the dehydrated food does not last through periods of heat or extreme cold, and so it's not what I would consider emergency food, something that is going to be there in 20 years through all various conditions. Whereas the freeze-dried food will, and it comes in basically a big coffee can, you know, that size can, a number 10 can. That's the size can, 6 to a case. I only sell cases, I don't sell individual cans. And so the point is that it's very easy to calculate how much that you would want based on your budget. Some people have ordered a lot. Some people have ordered one case. It just depends on your budget, comfort level, etc. But the point is that when you have freeze-dried food, it is approximately the same price as regular meat and food, but it's already cooked. And all you do is add water. A lot of the dehydrated foods you have to cook also to get the final product. In an emergency situations, a lot of times you're not going to be able to cook. So to get then the freeze-dried, if you open the can, it'll last for a month just sitting on the shelf opened. It does not have to be refrigerated because it's so dry. You want to keep it dry and away from moisture. But basically, you could leave that can sit on a shelf open for a month, and that'd be about the time it would take you to eat the can's worth of food, along with other food. Freeze-dried food is an amazing investment. It's an investment into the future, and it's a good way to eat now. The people that I know, when they get their emergency food, they don't just put it in the closet. They start eating it right away. They start working it into their diet and learning how to live off of the food that they have. What else do they need? Where else can they get other supporting food, etc.? I also suggest having rice, other kinds of dried good. Rice and beans is also very good to have on dried wheat, the red winter wheat, etc., and other types of sprouting. Sprouting is a very important, would be a very important sprouting seeds. And also with sprouting seeds, you can plant them. You can plant them and grow more. You can grow the full plants like radishes or broccoli or beans or whatever they are. And you can grow the plants and then grow your own seed stock. because they're organic non-hybrid. Make sure you get organic non-hybrid. That's the other thing about the freeze-dried food, is that first of all it's organic, and it's an extremely high quality food. This is not just junk meat off of the from the butcher. No, this is a very high quality product. So then that's what you're buying. If you bought that very same just pure meat at the grocery store, you'd be paying $10 a pound or more, and the freeze-dried food comes in much less than that. So at any rate, when you first see the prices of the freeze-dried food, you kind of have sticker shock, because you might be paying a couple hundred dollars or more for a case of six cans of meat. But you have to understand that that's going to last you a long time, and it's going to save. It's going to be there. So pound for pound, what I'm saying is that the freeze-dried food is equivalent price of food you would buy in a grocery store. And remember, freeze-dried food or any kind of food is going to be pretty much worthless if you don't have clean water. So the freeze-dried food goes very nicely hand-in-hand with the water filters, the Dalton water filters. And I've had a chance this past winter to be in many locations where I have brought my Dalton water filter. And I bring the full-size one along. I also have the travel size. But when I set up shop for a place for a week or two or longer, sometimes at a camp in a remote location, sometimes pre-filtering the water through an old T-shirt just to get the bulk of the gunk out of the water and then putting it into the water filter, or just in a remote resort area where you stay for a couple days, the water filter has been my best companion. And so I take it on camping trips. That it doesn't weigh much. It only weighs a few pounds. You can break it down, and you can put you just say I put clothes in it or other items of travel, and I put it right in my suitcase. At any rate, and then flax, I just can't say enough about flax. It's the one food that if you only had flax, you could survive for years on flax. So once again, I recommend two cases of flax per year per person as a survival food to have it on hand. And once again, you start eating it right away. Flax is probably the best thing on the planet for you and your system. So I'm out of time here. I'll be back next week. I'm doing a lot of radio shows promoting the new book, The Diamond Principle. Make sure you get your copy and read it, and then a lot of people are buying the full set of books to go along with it, but make sure you read The Diamond Principle. It's the book that's of the times, let's put it that way. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.